Okay. Okay, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Outlook Connectivity Current and Future session. My name is Guy Granveld. I am a French PFE. You may guess that with my awful accent. I'm sorry for that. I am a principal PFE, and I am also a MCM Exchange 2003, 2007, and 2010. So let's see what we will have in this session. So we will take a look at the two protocols that we can have to connect to Exchange 2013. So we have Outlook Anywhere, as we used to have in Exchange 2013 RTM, and now we have a new one, which is MAPI over HTTP, which will be introduced by Rafik and Venkat we have here. So the key takeaways will be how to configure Outlook Anywhere and troubleshoot Outlook Anywhere, and then the advantages of MAPI over HTTP and which protocol you should use when you, based on your environment. So let's take a look at Outlook Anywhere first. So what is Outlook Anywhere? Outlook Anywhere is based on RPC over HTTP. RPC over HTTP is a half duplex protocol. So you have, for every connection that we have to open for from the client up to the server, we have to open two sessions. One session for in data and one session for out data. So if you look at the picture we have here, you can see that the Outlook client, when it has to send some MAPI request up to the server, it has to wrap the request on RPC, and then RPC is wrapped itself on HTTP. Then we have HTTP up to the mailbox role through the CAS, and the RPC request is then handled by the RPC proxy DLL on the mailbox role, and then from the RPC proxy DLL, we connect directly to the mailbox. So how do we configure that? Well, you have two possibilities. As usual, you have the Exchange Admin Center, but in the Exchange Admin Center, you don't have the possibility to configure all of the parameters, and so, of course, in the Exchange Management Shell, you can configure the rest of the parameters. So you see in the graphical user interface that you can set internal hostname, external hostname. You can set the external authentication method, and you can set if you require SSL or not on the server side. So internal and external is a new concept that we have in Exchange 2013. If you look back to the previous version of Exchange, up to Exchange 2010, Outlook Anywhere was only used for external communication. So you were using it to connect from the internet up to your mailbox on your intranet. Now in Exchange 2013, you are using Outlook Anywhere for external communication and also for internal communication. We have also, so you have set Outlook Anywhere to configure it on the Exchange Management Shell. And we have another command, which is set Outlook Provider, which should not be very useful anymore because it was mainly used to configure the certificate when you are using an operating system which is soon to be expired, some few days from now, Windows XP. Okay, so when you have configured all of that, this is what it looks like. So you have the Outlook, Get Outlook Anywhere property, and you can see what I have configured here. I have external hostname, client authentication method, and SSL require or not for internal communication and external communication. And I can configure both with Outlook Anywhere. So when I set those parameters are then advertised up to the Outlook client, and the Outlook client will build this profile based on what you have configured on the Exchange server. So auto-discover is really important, and you should only rely on auto-discover. I will repeat this several times, but it is really important to make sure that you don't try to work around auto-discover. You should rely on auto-discover. So you see here that I have, for the internal hostname, so what you see here is not my recommendation regarding the configuration, yeah? It is here only to have an example. So when you look at here, you see, for example, that for the internal authentication method, I have NTLM. And internal client require SSL is set to false. What does it mean? It means that I'm telling Outlook to configure the profile so that when it does internal communication, it will use HTTP instead of HTTPS. For the external one, I say external client require SSL set to true. This time, Outlook will use HTTPS to connect to the server. So you see, you can control everything you want from the server side, and then it is pushed up to the Outlook client, and it is used in the profile. Of course, when you do those settings, you have also some other settings on Outlook Anywhere, which are configuring the way IIS on the server will behave. So you have to make sure that what you set on the client configuration will match what you have on the server configuration. What I mean is, for example, I have internal client authentication method, which is NTLM. If I remove IIS authentication method NTLM, then the client will not have the possibility to log on. And you will have constant authentication pop-up. You will not be able to log on. So you have to be very careful on what you configure, just to make sure that everything works properly. So let's see how it works. So here you have an Outlook client, you have a client access server, and a mailbox server. So I did separate the two roles on purpose to make the animation more understandable. Of course, you remember that the recommendation from Microsoft is to deploy multi-roles. Anyway, so I have on the client access server my Outlook Anywhere configuration. So I have set internal and external with the same host name. So I am in split DNS configuration. I have configured the authentication to be negotiated. We will see later what it brings us. And I have configured also to require SSL, so the client will do an HTTPS connection up to the server. So first, what happens? The Outlook has to build this profile. Remember, everything comes from its auto-discover. So I'm going to the CAS. I get authenticated on the CAS. Once I get authenticated, my request is forwarded to a mailbox role. You have to remember that in Exchange 2013, the CAS is not doing anything except proxying the request to a mailbox role. So the auto-discover request will be handled by the mailbox role. So the mailbox role gets the information from the user and sends it back to the client. Once the client gets the answer, then it can generate its profile. And as you can see, it will just use what it has got from the auto-discover request. So you get exactly the same thing that you have on the CAS. Okay, so normally it should match if you have IIS authentication method set correctly, including negotiate then, and also making sure that you, SSL is okay because we are requesting it. So, once we have this information, then the Outlook client can build a new URL. So the URL which is built is here downside, and it is using the host name that we have configured with /rpc/rpcproxy.dll, question mark, and then you see mailbox quid at the domain name. I will explain just in some few clicks from now why we are using the mailbox quid, okay? So we have the URL, we have the authentication to use, so we can go. So I open, remember, two sessions, one for in, one for out, and those two sessions will go to the CAS, and by the way, if you remember, in Exchange 2010 or 2007, we had three ports in use, which were 6001, 6002, and 6004. But now, in Exchange 2013, we have merged the address book service with the replication, the RPC client access service. So the RPC client access service needs only port 6001. So it is an optimization regarding the number of ports that will be used. So anyway, I have only one URL. So when I have this URL, which it reaches the CAS, so the CAS will use the remaining of the URL to determine where is the mailbox of the user. And so you remember the little drawings that we had in the previous slide where you saw the RPC request, which was generated and wrapped in HTTP, sent up to the RPC proxy DLL? That's why we are using the mailbox grid here on the domain, the server name, because we are not looking at the RPC packet. We are not opening what the request. So if we have to know where to go. And this is the way we are using to know where to go. So what does the CAS do? The CAS just retrieves the mailbox grid. From the mailbox grid, it knows where the mailbox is hosted, in which database. Then the CAS will talk with the DAG members to talk with an active manager to know where the database is currently active, and the request will be proxied. So to proxy the request, we build a new URL, which is built by the CAS, to connect to the mailbox role. And you see here that it is using the TCP port 444 because the mailbox role is listening on port 444. So I have my URL. So I do the connection. When I do the connection, the proxy DLL is getting the user information, so the fact that it has been authenticated, the session grid, and so things like that, which will be wrapped in the HTTP header. So when we do the client access server does the connection up to the mailbox role, it sends in the HTTP header the information regarding the user who got authenticated and the information the mailbox it was looking for. Okay? So the information here reaches the RPC proxy DLL. So the RPC proxy DLL has been modified since Windows 2008 R2 with a hotfix, which is a prerequisite for Exchange 2013, to be able to use what is within the HTTP header. So the RPC proxy DLL will retrieve the information which is in the HTTP header and will give the RPC request plus information which were in the HTTP header up to the RPC client access service. So the RPC client access service will then see what is in the request, okay? And we'll see if because you remember we sent using the HTTP header, the user and the mailbox we are looking at, then the RPC client access service is just making sure that the user which is requesting access has effectively access to the mailbox requested. If it is okay, then you are done. You retrieve the content information of the mailbox and you send it back to the Outlook client. And of course, if you have some address book queries, it will also be handled by the RPC client access service, because remember, we merged the address book service within the RPC client access service. So, Kerberos. So up to Exchange 2010, we couldn't use Kerberos with Outlook Anywhere because we had two layers of authentication. You had to authenticate on the HTTP, and then you had to authenticate on RPC. And if you look at an Outlook profile, you will see that you have the two kinds of authentication. In Exchange 2013, with the modification which had been done on RPC proxy, we can achieve Kerberos now. If you remember from the animation, I explained it, in fact. So you have the authentication which is done at the IIS on the CAS. Then the information is wrapped in the HTTP header, which is sent to the other server. And the RPC proxy DLL has been modified to be able to interpret what it is getting. And that's why when you look on your Outlook profile and you look at the authentication which will be used at the RPC level, you see anonymous authentication. Because in fact, the authentication had been done previously. So we can achieve now that we are doing only one authentication, we can achieve Kerberos now. And how do we achieve Kerberos? Well, it's easy. So it's like in Exchange 2010, you have to use an Internet service account, and you have to configure the client access servers to use this Internet service account credentials. Once you have done that, you add on the Internet service account the SPN, service principal name, And once you have that, and the client is configured to use negotiate, when the client will negotiate the authentication with the server, it will use Kerberos. If you want to have more details regarding the Kerberos authentication, you can refer to the slides, the session which was delivered by Brian Day Monday regarding deploying Exchange 2013. By the way, you cannot use Kerberos with coexistence with Exchange 2010 or 2007. You remember the RPC proxy DLL has been modified to be able to use the HTTP header, which contains the information and things like that. And this information is given to the RPC client access service, where the RPC client access service in Exchange 2010 or the information store in Exchange 2007 is not able to understand that. So it will not work. So some basics on troubleshooting. First of all, apply all the recommended hotfixes. And not only Exchange, Outlook. Make sure Outlook is up to date. Make sure, as I said previously, that the configuration you configure in Outlook Anywhere, which will be advertised to the client, is matching the configuration that will be pushed to IIS. Make sure that your certificates are valid. No, not revoked, not expired, that the subject or the subject alternative name in the certificate is containing the URLs you are using. And when you change Outlook Anywhere settings, well, I would give you my best troubleshooting tips that I'm delivering every time I deliver a troubleshooting workshop. You know, every time you do a change, you go to drink a coffee. Okay? You don't do a change, it doesn't work, do another change, it doesn't work, do another change, and so on. Because when you change something, it may take time to be notified by Exchange. So for example here, if I'm modifying something on Outlook Anywhere settings, which is changing something on IIS, this modification will be, when I do the set Outlook Anywhere, blah, 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 it will modify something in AD, and then from AD, it has to be replicated to IIS. And the service which is doing that is the Microsoft Exchange host service. So if you want to make it faster, you restart the service. And if you have modified some settings which have to be advertised to the client, you do a test auto-discover, you see that it is still sending the previous settings before you did the modification, you recycle the auto-discover application pool on the mailbox role, not on the client access. We have a lot of tools. So we have some very good guided walkthrough for on-premise and for Office 365. They will help you troubleshoot your connectivity issue. You have a lot very good validation tools. You have the offline configuration analyzer tool. I don't know if you have heard about that. It is a very nice tool which will run on your laptop where you try to connect to Exchange, and it's a kind of EXBPA for Office. So it will check everything, and it will report you what is wrong. Of course, you have the testexchangeconnectivity.com. And within testexchangeconnectivity, you have seen probably that since some few months, we have also a client version. So the testexchangeconnectivity allows you to test from internet to make sure that everything is working. And if you have any issue from your intranet, because now we are using Outlook Anywhere internally, you can use the client version that you install on one of your PC within the intranet, and you can run exactly the same test. Of course, you have the connection status. You all know the connection status. And you have the test email auto-configuration. Those will help you to determine if everything is going well. And if, after all that, you are still in trouble, then you have the debugging. And the good news is that Exchange 2013 is generating a lot of interesting logs. So maybe you know LogParser or LogParser Studio. There is a good explanation of how to use them in the EHLO blog. And definitely, it's a good way to read the logs and to find errors if there is any. So to summarize for Outlook Anywhere, keep Outlook up to date, definitely. And also, make sure that you configure Outlook anywhere correctly. Again, server side and client side are matching. And I would recommend not changing, you know, you remember the IIS default authentication method and SSL offloading? Those defaults will work all of the time. So unless you need to change them for some specific reasons, I would recommend you to not change them. Keep them this way, and it will always work. And as I said, you rely on AutoDiscover. Definitely don't try to change anything manually on the client, because AutoDiscover will push back and things there after. Okay? So this is it for Outlook Anywhere. Now it's time for MAPI over HTTP, the new protocol.
Merci beaucoup, Guy. I was so excited when I first heard that actually majority of the people that are going to be delivering this talk are speaking actually French, and I thought it's going to be my first opportunity to deliver my first French-speaking talk, like in Mac. But then we got overruled. Actually, democracy doesn't always work, so we'll do it in English. I'll just add like one little thing. As you may have noticed, like the talk is a 200 talk, but we have received so many requests actually to get a little bit more deeper into the details. And the fact that you guys here means that you're probably one of those that have requested that. And if you're still staying here, that means that you're interested. So we'll continue probably at the same level of detail for the remaining of the talk. So MAPI over HTTP. So for my section, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go briefly over like why are we adding a new protocol, what does the new protocol do, and now that we're introducing a new protocol basically between Outlook and Exchange, what does that mean for Outlook anywhere? So I would start first with if I go back a few years back when we introduced Outlook and Exchange, there was like one major assumption that we made with the protocol. It's the fact that most of the clients and the servers, were both like well connected. They're probably on the same LAN. There is almost no latency. In most cases, actually the server is sitting probably 10 feet away from your client. It's just in like the next room. Those things over the years got a little bit more complicated. And as you see in here, like there is many, many new scenarios like for using Outlook and connecting to Outlook. And most of those scenarios are actually relying on new network infrastructure. And this network infrastructure has very different characteristics basically than being connected over LAN. Like there is smaller bandwidth, there is probably high latencies, the network is not as reliable because in many cases, actually a packet can be completely dropped, and in which case Outlook will still be waiting for that packet to, like it sent a request to the server, it's still waiting for that thing, but because the network dropped it, it may take us like up to 20 minutes or something like that to recover from that situation. So those characteristics basically required us actually to introduce, design a new protocol. And this new protocol is keeping in mind the fact that actually we need to provide a much better user experience to the user. Like this is like one of the main goals for the MAPI over HTTP. Like we want to make sure that when you're over one of those networks, like that's where packets get dropped or where there is high latencies, actually your experience continues to be much better. The second thing actually that I would mention here is that our protocol, as you know, was based on RPC. And RPC is a very old protocol. It's been there for like quite a bit. It's on its way to be deprecated. Like there's not much innovation. There is many, many applications out there that rely on RPC. And it becomes very difficult for us if we want to introduce any innovation to modify RPC without breaking the other, like, hundreds, thousands of applications that are using RPC. So we get to a large degree shackled, like, it shackles, like, the innovation. And the opportunity for us to go and basically remove RPC from the protocol gives us also another opportunity to simplify significantly, like, our architecture and be able to innovate, but innovate even faster than what we've been able to do. So, as part of the innovation, we introduced the mapping over HTTP in SP1, and if you have went to the talk that was at 8:30, like for Outlook, like they have announced actually that we are introducing new multi-factor authentication or introducing multi-factor authentication to the cloud, which is one of the big asks that we have from customers. And there is actually a deep dive session at 1 p.m., I think. Yes, at 1 p.m., and it's USX 303. So if you're interested in a deeper dive, what kind of capabilities you will get actually with MFA, multiple-factor authentication, please go to that session. So now, what is MAPI over HTTP? So MAPI over HTTP is actually an entire rewrite of the transport protocol. So we ripped the protocol underneath Outlook, and we're replacing it actually with a new one, a new protocol that's actually designed for like this new type of networks that we have. It is also something that's actually conform with the HTTP 1.1 protocol. So it is a standard thing. It's based on basically HTTP requests. We just do a post to the server, and we're able to basically get the data back. The other thing that we've done that's made the protocol pretty solid and adds a lot of robustness to the protocol is that we have disassociated basically the connection from the session. Because now we know that actually I can... So we keep the state of the session on the server. This way, even if a connection gets dropped, like, we can recover the state of the session just before, actually, the connection got dropped, which is something that before, like, in the Outlook Anywhere, like, if you drop the connection, what needs to happen is you need to have to go negotiate a new connection, negotiate a new session and everything. And that takes time. And if you're on, like, a flaky network, actually, anything that drops there, you need to go through that process altogether. With the new protocol, we have the ability to pause and resume actually our session and connection like to the server, and which makes accelerate significantly the connection between the client and the server. And we'll see that later. So I reused the graph or the diagram that Guy showed initially to cover basically the MAPI over the Outlook Anywhere. And we added basically the new diagram for MAPI over HTTP. Any adjective come to mind when you're describing the difference, like the new architecture? Yes, it's much, much simpler, less complexity. And as you see, like the protocol that we had, like we had to have multiple connection and in and out. We had to encapsulate the protocol in RPC and then encapsulate it in HTTP. The new protocol, it's like you have a full duplex thing. Like there is only like we send our commands on top of HTTP, just like HTTP requests. I can actually, if we wanted to debug it, it becomes much, much simpler. Like I can use a tool like Fiddler or some other thing that we're going to be showing later, and you can actually debug what's happening like over the wire with your protocol, and you have full visibility in it. And before, like you had to have like expertise in RPC and know how the protocol works and everything. And then whenever we run into an issue, it takes us, like even as a product group, it takes us months basically to go figure it out. With the new protocol, it's much, much faster and easily debuggable, which means that we can stabilize the protocol and get it actually and fix any problems much faster than we were able to do. And the other thing that we have done is that we made the protocol very clear about the expectations. Like, initially, today with Outlook Anywhere, like if you drop a packet, Outlook clients may be waiting for a long time. With this new protocol, we have clear expectation between the client and the server, where actually if we lose the connection, like we will time out that connection will basically reestablish a new one, and it goes much faster. And it makes the experience from a user perspective very, very predictable. My next slide is similar to the other one that Guy presented, the awesome slide with a lot of details and interesting details about how the old protocol works. Like, this one also illustrates a new thing, which is the way it works is that we start, like Outlook, when you start your Outlook, Outlook's gonna go talk to the server using AutoDiscover, and it advertises that it's capable of using the new protocol. If the server is able to use the new protocol, it would send the AutoDiscover payload with the information to the client to be able to connect. And Outlook at that time basically just connect, and now you have a MAPI over HTTP session that's started. The cool thing about this is that we have the ability to introduce, we know that migration or migration does not happen overnight. So we know that you're gonna upgrade some server, you're gonna upgrade some client, and for a long time, you're gonna need to be able to have a coexistence like between old server, new server, old client, and new client. And this protocol allows us, like if I have an Outlook that's capable of using MAPI over HTTP and it's talking to a new client, a new server, it will use MAPI over HTTP. If it's talking to a mailbox that's on a server that does not support that, it will keep using actually the old protocol. And even better, if I'm connected to two mailboxes and one is on a server that can talk MAPI over HTTP and the other one cannot, Outlook can talk to both at the same time, and it would be completely transparent to the user. Like, our goal was to make sure that actually from a user perspective, it's as transparent as possible. There is also the possibility that something like I'm connected to a mailbox and somehow the protocol basically gets enabled on the server. In that case, what happens is that we will keep everything the way it is. Like, from a user perspective, it's gonna continue to work. If we had an Outlook Anywhere connection, an RPC connection, we will continue using that. And then we will wait because we know that customers restart their clients once every day or 2 days. Like, the next time they restart the machine, we will just go and use the new protocol. So from a user perspective, we're introducing a new protocol, but we're trying to make sure that actually it does respect the time it takes to upgrade, and it also does respect the user experience to make sure that it's as transparent as possible. So to show you the benefits of the protocol, and this is like a little bit of preliminary data that we collected, but what we've done is we looked at when I resume a machine from Hibernate, I had my laptop closed, I opened my laptop, it resumed from Hibernate, how long does it take Outlook to start syncing? So, and we timed that time basically for both protocols. And as you see, so the first graph, what it shows you is it shows a cumulative view. So the way I read it is so if I take, for example, the 10 seconds, I know that about 50% of the sessions happened within 10 seconds. And then if you move to the next one, you will see how many other sessions actually used it. And the one thing that's clear here is you see that the blue for the first graph, the blue is much higher. So percentage-wise, we are able to start sync on the MAPI over HTTP much faster than we can when you're using for a machine that uses the old protocol, even if you're connected to the same set of environments. The other thing, the number one that I showed there shows that actually for 80% of the sessions, what we were able to accomplish with the new protocol, start sync in less than 30 seconds compared to 40 seconds for the old protocol. And if you want to understand more why this is happening, this is the second graph, where it's presenting the same data, except that actually what we've done is we overlaid it, we didn't add it up. And what you can see is around the number two there is a lot of sessions that actually get started, sync gets started much faster than the old protocol. And the reason is because we have the pause resume functionality that we talked about, where actually the state of the session is already on the server. And even when I do resume my machine from hibernation, the machine can almost directly start talking to the server, and the server has a state of the session, and it gets things very fast. The number tree there is showing basically when we do a full connection. So today, we keep the state of the session on the server for about 15 minutes. So if I resumed my machine like 30 minutes later or an hour later because I went to lunch, like I would probably have to negotiate a new session because that state is gone. And the reason we kept it for 15 minutes is just to, this is the first, we just shipped the protocol and we want to be a little bit conservative to make sure that actually from a resource perspective, we are optimizing for both experience and resources. But you could imagine that if we move that 15 minutes to 30 minutes or to an hour, there's going to be way more sessions that are going to actually be able to resume within the 2 to 5 second time. So this is a protocol that actually makes the user experience much faster. And this is a similar graph, but this is actually for the Outlook boot. So this is sync from boot. I started Outlook, how much time it takes me basically to start syncing. And again, you can see that the Outlook mapping over HTTP is much faster to do those kind of things. This is another graph that shows the time it takes to connect. So over the left, we have the Outlook Anywhere, and over the right, we have the mapping over HTTP. And the data we have on the left, as you can notice, is a little bit flat. This is because the sample of data that we're collecting is pretty significant. On the left, this was much less, and you can see some fluctuation in there. But the important thing to see is that there are more than 50 to 60% of the sessions that establish a connection with the new protocol in less than a second. The dips that you see in the middle, those are the weekend where people, there's less, even less data, and actually people are connected probably from remote network and everything. But if you look at the middle of the week when there's a lot of people actually using the service, you can still see that there is 50 to 60% of the people that are connecting in less than 1 second, and there is probably about 90% of the people that connect in less than 5 seconds. And the trend is going higher comparing the old protocol to the new protocol. So this is it adds clear value to the customer with regard to the experience. So what does the introduction of the new protocol mean for the previous protocol? So the new protocol is the thing that we are betting on. As I mentioned, for all the reasons, the simplification of the architecture, the removal of dependencies of RPC, which is something that actually hinders our ability to innovate fast, you're going to see a lot of the innovation happening on the new protocol. We talked about already single sign-on and multi-factor authentication that you're going to see by the end of the year, but it's also there's going to be more innovation that we're going to be able to do in that protocol. At the same time, we do understand that everybody is running right now the old protocol, and it's going to take some time. So we're fully committed to supporting it, and we'll support it as much as it needs to be supported. It is something that actually we will allow you to have as smooth of a transition as possible, because we will allow your client, your old client, to talk to the new server that supports the protocol, and to have actually the new client to talk to both protocol. From the support perspective, we have shipped MAPI over HTTP support in SP1. So if you download Outlook 2013 SP1, you can use it. We are working on a port for Outlook 2010, because we understand that there are some customers that are still going to be running that for probably the next year or so. And so we need to make sure that actually people can go and switch to the new protocol much faster if they need to. And on the Exchange server side, we have also shipped support in SP1. The protocol is by default turned off for on-prem scenarios. So that's actually, if you want, you can go and enable that. And Venkat is going to cover those, how you can do that. And on the service, we went and we're starting the rollout. This is the protocol we want to bet on, and we want to run our service on this new protocol. So we're phasing in basically the new protocol support in Office 2013 over the next period of time. With that, I will transition to Venkat. And before I leave, actually, I'm going to give you all an opportunity to wave at the product team and we'll send them your picture. So everybody wave, and I'm gonna take a picture. Thank you very much, and we'll share that. They'll be very excited to know, actually, that there's that many people attending this session, and it will make them proud of the protocol they're working on. Thank you very much.
Can everyone hear me? Hi, I'm Venkat Ayadevara. I'm in the engineering team. I'm a program manager lead, working in the Exchange side, work very closely with Rafiq. And so the Outlook and Exchange teams have worked very, very closely with this. I'm very happy to talk to you about this. So I'm going to do a short demo. I got to tell you, trying to figure out what to demo for a protocol change is quite challenging. So if you're expecting an OWA, doc collab type demo, you're going to be disappointed, but it's still pretty cool. It's pretty cool to see. So let's switch to what I'm going to show you. That is the demo. But, and I hope no user ever notices it, right? So there's a few interesting things to look at. That actually is my mailbox. I can't show you Outlook because I don't want you to read my mail. That'd be kind of embarrassing. But the connection status dialog, which we've talked about, you have to do this jujitsu move of control, right click, and then you get to it. But once you get to it, it's showing connections which Outlook is using to all mailboxes. And today, what I have is I actually have my primary mailbox in a Microsoft Dockford environment, which is in the cloud. It comes with an archive. I think I connect, I have access to one public folder, which is on a 2013 on-premise environment. And I'm connected here to an account in a different Office 365 tenant, which is not enabled for MAP HTTP. So if you look through the connection window, starting from up top, the first row there is actually my primary mailbox. It's a connection to the Exchange directory. And if you start from the left, you got the SMTP address, the display name is blank, but it's my primary mailbox. No proxy server, because that's because it's using MAP HTTP. The server name is a URL. And this is actually very important. One of the things we found as you go to a very distributed system, whether it's in on-premises or it's in the cloud, and you have very highly distributed clients communicating, it's really critical that the client takes settings which Exchange returns as opaque and just blindly follows them. And so you always run into problems we found where we had these checks and balances where if route one failed, you try to reverse engineer and the client is constructing a query because if you change the scheme in the future of how the server communicates with the client, you need a client update, which we all know is a very complicated affair, right? So here, all Outlook is using is, here's the URL to connect to directory, and here's the URL, and here's the authentication scheme to use. That's it. And so that's kind of very powerful. And even better, AutoDiscover just sends it the URL. Now that we made it just like any other HTTP protocol, similar to the typical HTTP request response pattern, it can just make an anonymous request and get back in the response. These are the authentication methods that Exchange supports and use the best one possible. So that one is using HTTP. Authentication says clear, that just means basic. If you go one line down, that's my online archive. So it's able to connect to my online archive using MAP HTTP as well because that's in an environment which supports it. If you go to the third, I think I'm going to skip past the third one. The fourth one is very interesting. User one at a test tenant. That one has a proxy server, field populated outlook.office365.com, and a server name, which is that mailbox GoAid at the domain. That one's using RPC HTTP, right? So what I had done for the demo is I have my primary mailbox, and along with that, I get the archive in the public folder settings, and I added this to my profile. And this mailbox is not enabled. This tenant is not enabled for MAP HTTP, but I can connect to RPC HTTP, and it's using the RPC HTTP authentication, which is basic for the outer layer, anonymous for the inner layer, completely transparent to the user. And then if you go one line down, that's the public folders connection to an on-premises environment, which supports Negotiate. So it's using MAP HTTP, but using Negotiate. And all of this, all I had to do was open my Outlook, and it just connects to these. And that's the reason we're showing this is we completely understand that all of you run very complex environments, and it'll take some time to migrate. You may have a heterogeneous set of clients. We want to work with you to make sure that we want you to move to MAPI or HTTP, but we want to make it a very, very smooth process. And so there's a lot of work, both from the Outlook and Exchange teams, which has gone into making that possible. So The other thing I wanted to cover in the demo, so I'm going to switch to the browser, is, you know, Rafiq talked about the ability to leverage headers for diagnostics, for, you know, for understanding what the health of the service is. This used to be a big frustration for us working to resolve customer problems, because RPC adds a level of opacity. It was great for the time when it was developed, like for the LAN environments, but it adds a level of opacity which slows down your ability to solve problems. So one of the things we've done with this new protocol is these header exchange, and we've done, and so you can do some really nifty things. So these are examples of what we did internally, our devs just did, to help do Dogford investigations, user investigations. So for example, I'm going to click on this URL. This is a URL hitting the same Exchange server where my mailbox is, that service endpoint. It does an authenticated call, but then once I authenticate, you can just figure out, so what I've been able to do is I'm able to go from the browser and know that I can successfully connect to the MAPI HTTP endpoint. It knows who I am, I see what the version is, and I can also see where my mailbox is, right? It tells you the cafe is just the CAS server and mailbox server, and my dev told me to strictly tell you this is not localized. This is something we developed internally, but you know, this tells you the type of diagnostics you can do. You could even do this kind of diagnostics using Fiddler, because it's just headers. And so now what I'm going to do is, there's a special flag. If I add that flag, I even know every session. For every session, I know the operations Outlook executed, whether it was successful, which CAS server we went through. This is really important. If you have a global namespace, you don't control which CAS server these requests go to. So this avoids you from having to search every single CAS server for where the request went. So that's hugely powerful. And also you'll see a ton of request IDs. These IDs are so that you can easily correlate the client and server logs. So really, really powerful. And on top of it, you see which one succeeded. There's a ton of, and you have no failed operations, so the connection is pretty healthy. Active operation, notification, wait. That is the hanging connection similar to OAuth or ActiveSync, so that Outlook can listen for notifications from the server and know when to fetch mail, right? So you can see how very quickly we were able to generate a simple web page. It's authenticated, so you have to have credentials to be able to log in and access the info, and you're able to get information for the for the endpoint. And in this case, this was against the mailbox to fetch information from your mailbox. There's also a similar endpoint is available to look at what the directory connection looks like. And this, you know, my mailbox is in the cloud, but the same feature, it's very easy to make this work against on-premise as well. So now the URL I'm about to show you, primary.exchange, is the on-premise environment where the public folder, which I'm accessing, is hosted. So this is really the big power. And so what we're hoping for is we can leverage these headers and this information to offer you diagnostics tools, and maybe the ecosystem will build some diagnostic tools, which will really make our jobs effective. So design a protocol to ensure a really good user experience, but in case it is not working as expected, that it makes it very easy and efficient for us to debug them. So that was the demo part. Again, apologies, because it's not as flashy as some of the other demos you've seen, but hopefully it conveys the point. So I'm gonna switch back to the deck. So as I said, we looked at the connection status dialog and we looked at a diagnostics example. And now I'm going to switch to deploying and managing. I think, just walk through what are the steps. So the first thing, we actually have an article which we're trying to keep up to date based on all the learnings we've gotten deploying it for Microsoft users and what our customers are telling us. So please, before you start, go read this article. We're doing our best to keep it current, and that way you have the best information. And the next few steps I'm giving you are really a summary of what exists on that page. This was also, I think Jeff Mieliff covered this in his deployment and sizing guidance. Please install 4.5.1, .NET 4.5.1. There's some key fixes in there which really make for optimal MAPI HTTP performance. There's some key fixes there, especially with related to the hanging GET, which Outlook and Exchange use to pass notifications. You need to upgrade to at least SP1, Service Pack 1. One important note here, you must upgrade every single client access server before you turn on Alchemy for your organization. The reason for this is, the client access server, we don't control, any client access server could get a MAPI HTTP request, and you want to make sure it's able to process it. On the mailbox server, you can go mailbox server by mailbox server, because For the mailboxes enabled on a specific server, MapPHTP would work. For the others, RPCHTP would work fine. So that's one key thing to remember. And you would need Outlook 2013. We recommend doing the, installing the latest PU. And one important note here is to avoid the awesome your administrators restarted Exchange or change Exchange settings. You must restart. Avoid that prompt. There are some changes which you should pick up in the April 2014 click to run. See you, or the May 2014 public update would have it as well. So that eliminates the restart prompt and irritations for your users. So with that, I wanted to spend a little bit of time with the 4.5.1 example, because the way we discovered that there's the how important these fixes are is we actually have an internal Dogfood environment where we have a few thousand users, and a ton of them are using Alchemy. And what this MapPHTP and what this chart is showing you is the blue line, which is going up and down, is really the number of requests Exchange is receiving for every hour. And that time period is for a week. So it starts on a Tuesday and ends on a Monday. And the colors are, for those requests in every hour, what latency range they fall into. The numbers are not critical, but what you have to remember is anything in green and yellow is fine. It'll lead to an okay user experience. Anything beyond that, which is the reds, the blues, and the grays, really, really bad experience. And one of the things we started getting is we started getting these user complaints about them seeing long, long wait times, like Outlook not being responsive. And as we investigated, even our metrics were telling us that people who had requests in the range I've highlighted, basically Outlook was not usable for them. They were taking way too long to complete. And so as we investigated, we figured out that some of the key fixes in 4.5.1 would help. And after those were deployed, you can see what a drastic change in the Outlook performance. You can see now in this chart that basically almost all requests are in the green and the yellow range. So extremely helpful. And the reason for this is the notification channel is supposed to be asynchronous and not tie up threads on the client access server. And this bug, what it causes is it causes actually these threads, a thread to get locked up for every notification channel. And as more and more people log in during the day and becomes extremely busy, ASP.NET kicks in and says, okay, thread creation is very expensive and you're taking way too many threads. And so it starts queuing requests. So the people are having a bad experience. It's because they're just waiting forever. And once the fix was applied, since the entire call is asynchronous, you don't run into this, I don't have enough threads problem. So extremely helpful to actually have the fix out there. So something to keep in mind. So please install 4.5.1. So with that, I want to get back to how to turn on and map your HTTP. So we went through the prerequisites. We looked at 4.5.1, why it's important. Configuration. There's a new virtual directory. So you need to configure that. I think I've given an example for how to do it for your internal. The web page link I showed in the prior slides has for external and internal. You should set both of those. To avoid the certificate prompt, which users really get alarmed by, make sure that those internal and external namespaces are there in the cert and that Outlook trusts the cert. Really, really critical. You've got a new virtual directory you're hitting. This is a new protocol. Please make sure that your load balancer, reverse proxies, firewalls, basically your network is configured to allow the request to pass through and doesn't block it. So make sure that that's there. Now for customers who are using UAG, today UAG Service Pack 3 is not compatible, even if you disable all the filtering options, but we're working with UAG and I believe support is coming. I don't have an exact timeline for you. And the final thing, once you've done all of these, is you would use a set organization commandlet to turn on MapPHTP. So that's, at that point, any server, all the backend servers which have the right version and so on are able to service MapPHTP. Validating, you can quickly run test Outlook connectivity using, I think, the command line arguments I provided. And the logs, there are three logs which you would care about. If you're in a multi-role, with multi-role deployment, which is what we recommend, all these three would be on the same server. If not, the first one is on the client access server, the other two are on the mailbox server. So there's a HTTP proxy log, and then there is one for MAPI client access and address book service. So there's one thing I want to mention here. If you remember when Guy talked about Outlook Anywhere, we had collapsed, to save on the number of long-lived connections, we had collapsed the address book service and the RPC client access into one service, RPC client access service. It was a lot of hard work. And then immediately when we introduced MapPHTP, we broke them apart into two again. And the reason we did that, though, was, you know, the connection pressure is not there anymore because with the request response pattern, you have one long-lived connection with the other one, you're using very efficiently. And so by breaking them apart, you get the advantage of process isolation. So if one goes down, the other is still up, and that helps a lot. So especially if the address book service goes down, but the mailbox access is up, if you're primarily only fetching directory information, which you have in your offline address book, it would still work. And finally, the connection status dialog. You can see, just to reiterate, the protocol field would tell you if it's using HTTP or RPC HTTP, and there are other fields you can check out as well as the proxy server, MT for the case of MapPHTP, and are using a URL instead of some kind of a GUID. So those are the things. Now we get to the interesting, really interesting part, sizing and performance. How many of you attended Jeff Mieliff's sizing talk yesterday? Just a quick show of hands. Okay, quite a few of you, some of you didn't. So he covered overall sizing guidance, but I want to talk about the MapPHTP. So we talked about a lot of benefits, but there is certainly some cost to it. One of them is that our CPU guidance, CPU utilization guidance has increased by 50% from RTM to SP1. If you're migrating, if you're upgrading from 2010, you're still going to use less CPU cycles, but if you're going from RTM, there's an increase. The good news, though, is for the recommended mode of deployment, multi-role deployment, the impact actually has been quite minimized. So if you look at the table, which is there for multi-role deployment examples, the first customer would have to do something, because if you compare the RTM versus SP1 guidance, we don't want them running at 102%. And these are, by the way, real customer profiles. Jeff covered them as well. And so these are real customer profiles. The second one, maybe, but certainly customer 4, 5, and 6 are well within the 80% we recommend. So they don't have to do anything to enable MapPHTP. Now, if you're in a dedicated role deployment, then definitely this means more client access servers. So our guidance has changed from 1:2 ratio for cast to mailbox CPU cycle, CPU cores, to 3:8, and that's a 50% increase. And so one large customer example we have here, from 23 cast servers, they would go to 33 cast servers. On our side, we are, I think, in Office 365, we do use a dedicated role deployment, but the benefits we get from this quality of Outlook connectivity at scale, the supportability, and the ability to diagnose requests, we're going full steam ahead. But if you're going from RTM to SP1, MapPHTP is disabled by default so that this doesn't block your SP1 deployment, and you get some time to figure out your specific needs, your sizing needs, use a calculator, and you have the necessary resources in place before you turn it on. So that's one reason it's off by default. And as I said before, Jeff Mieliff's talk does a pretty comprehensive overview of the overall sizing, so I would recommend watching that recording. So what is underlying this sizing guidance? The performance. Let's look at the performance. And the worst case for MapPHTP compared to Outlook Anywhere would be when the network is perfect, right? Because that was what Outlook Anywhere was designed for. And so CPU, certainly higher, I think. And the reason it's higher is similar to OAuth, if you have a request response, you're sending again and again, instead of having a connection where you're just sending these operations over an established connection, you're paying an overhead price for every single request. Authentication, proxying, all of these, right? And that's where the cost is going up. So our long-term direction, what we want to do to even further improve user experience over high latency, low bandwidth networks, is to make the protocol less chatty. But that's like a very, very long process, right? It'll take a long time. But in the meantime, the request response rate is what is causing the CPU increase. But luckily, fortunately for people in multi-role deployment, the impact should be minimal. The good news on the memory front, much lower. The reason is you got less number of connections, and the amount of buffer we need to keep for the connection is significantly less. For MapPHTP, for that notification channel for connection, we keep only 128 bytes, and this compares to a 32 kilobyte buffer we got to maintain for every one of those RPC connections. The connection count is low because with RPC you needed two long-lived connections. Here, If you have an idle client, you get a 50% reduction. You only got one connection established. And if you got a fully utilized client, then it's almost close to two. And your real savings will vary somewhere between 0 to 50%. If users connect to multiple mailboxes all the time, your savings is going to be much more because the user is active in one mailbox. So it's not on the other mailboxes, you're really going to get the connection savings. The bytes per wire is slightly higher, and this is because of the diagnostic information, the connection, the state information being passed back and forth. It's about 1.4% increase on a packet size for an average packet size of 50 kilobytes. And what we find is if you're doing large data transfers, like a deep sync, et cetera, we see about 5 to 10% increase. And those are the interesting cases. If you are doing smaller packets all the time, you're obviously going to see more of overhead because overhead is constant and you know the packet size is smaller. But again, this isn't a perfect network. One of the things we strongly believe is if the network has drops or you know you're doing resume hibernate type situation, then MAPPHTP would be fine from a bytes over wire, or could even be better. The reason being that in the Outlook Anywhere case, if the connection gets cut, you start from ground zero again. So if you start resyncing items again and again, you're quickly going to cross whatever little bit of overhead you're adding with the header. So something to keep in mind. If you're an Office 365, you don't worry about the configuration or sizing. We're gradually rolling out across across the server footprint and across our set of customers. Please do keep deploy the latest Outlook 2013 updates. I think Peter Ellenspach covered that in his 8:30 talk on what's new in Outlook as well. Ton of fixes being rolled out regularly, and we'd like you to take advantage of them. So just wrapping up, here's a quick version matrix based on the rows are your Outlook versions which are used in your environment, and the columns are the Exchange versions used in your environment. And map your HTTP, you need SP1 or later in both cases. Outlook Anywhere, if you are using Exchange 2013, and you can use RPC or Outlook Anywhere for older Exchange versions. And as Rafiq mentioned, as was formally announced in an earlier talk today, we are porting to Outlook 2010, and so once that port is available, then you'll be able to use MapYourHTTP, and that's why there's an asterisk. So what's next? I mean, we're really, we've introduced this protocol. We're starting to use it. Well, there's a few things, and I know I was checking Twitter. Already people were asking about this. The Outlook access to legacy public folders using RPC will be out in CU5, and this is something we've already figured out how to make the fix and might even be in. So that should be in. So wait for Exchange CU5 if you need RPC access to legacy public folders in the same forest. And the Outlook, as I said before, the Outlook restart prompt gets eliminated if you pick up the May public update or the April click to run. And there's a few more things we have in our backlog. The first one is all the configuration I showed you is command line. We're working to add that to Exchange Admin Center. So that's one. And the second one is making sure the test exchange connectivity works with MapYourHTTP, that it supports that. And then we have gotten requests saying, is it possible for me to turn on MapPHTP for a few users and see how it works before I turn it on for my ARC? Today, the configuration is enabled for the entire ARC. And we're investigating that to see if it's feasible. If it is, we'll do something. And finally, as I said, our long-term direction is that, the ability to deal with packet drops is great, and the connection count data reduction is great. The next thing we need to deal with is making the protocol much less chatty, and that helps the user experience if they're in a poor network. It also helps us, it helps all of us, because the amount of CPU consumed on the server will be lower in that case. There was for those of you who missed the talk, there was a talk at 8:30 a.m. this morning on generally like what's new in Outlook 2013, even beyond MapYourHTTP, so I'd really recommend you watching the recording. And finally, the MapYourHTTP summary. So it is the long-term replacement, and we believe there's a lot of value being added. The quality of service, the quality of connectivity would be great. And we've taken a lot of care to make it easy for you to deploy. You're in control when you turn it on. The coexistence, there's a strong coexistence story here. And we are looking for feedback. And there's a couple of just wanted to call out a couple of talks. There's a Q&A, if you have questions regarding client access server, including MapPHTP, there's one session today, because I know some of you couldn't get into the session we had yesterday morning. And there's also an Outlook Q&A later today, so I'd encourage you folks to attend. And with that, just in the appendix, I have the gory details of what the auto-discover response looks like, what a sample MapPHTP request and response looks like. You're welcome to, for those of you who are interested, you're welcome to read, but we thought we'd open the floor to questions. Thank you. And for the questions, please come to the mic so everyone can hear you.
Okay. So for the IaaS authentication method, when we saw on Monday a short introduction, especially on repairing, removing the MAPI virtual directory and recreating it, with a proper authentication method recommended was to use NTLM negotiate open authentication. And then in one of your slides, you explained to set negotiate. So what would be the recommended?
So I should make that clear. That is not so much a recommended. That's less of a recommended guidance, more of an example of how you would run the commandlet. And so I think whatever the guidance you got on Monday hold, I think that was just an example of how you would set the settings. So thanks for bringing that up.
In a hybrid exchange environment, which servers to? On-prem, if any, do I need to upgrade to SP1 for my 365-based users to be able to use MapPHTP?
I see. So if I want to make sure I understood your question. So you're saying in a hybrid exchange environment.
Correct.
Which one should I enable first?
Do I have to upgrade anything on my on-prem environment for my clients to be able to use MapPHTP?
You would certainly need to upgrade your clients to be MapPHTP capable.
Yeah, on the server side.
And then there are different combinations. So if, as long as the mailboxes which you're accessing on-premise versus the mailboxes accessed in the cloud are, even if it's with the same user, if Outlook is auto-discovering them separately, then you're completely fine. It will use the right, let's assume that MapPHTP is enabled for that mailbox in Office 365, but it's not enabled for you, it'll connect fine. If there are some cases we know, and we've been fixing them, where Outlook, and this is code from before, where you may use the setting. Sometimes we try to use the settings from the primary mailbox and retry it against this other secondary mailbox. In that case, it would work. But I believe in most cases, especially because you're talking about a cross-forest situation, the auto-discover will kick in, and you should be fine. It'll use the right protocol for either one.
Okay. And are there any new GPO settings if you wanted to turn off that protocol from automatically lighting up that you could apply at the client side?
Oh, sorry, can you repeat the question?
Is there any?
Sorry?
Are there any GPO settings you can apply to the clients?
GPOs. Yeah, you want to take that?
Yes, we do have GPOs that will allow you actually to disable, enable the protocol on the clients. But it's like, you have to do it client by client or user.
Yeah, and that's the reason we didn't cover it in the talk, because there's a maintenance over, you know, this maintenance overhead. You got to remember which users have it. And then later, when time passes by and it's enabled by default, you find out there's some people still working on the old one. And so, but there is a policy available.
Hey, relating to AutoDiscover, what's your recommendations when you're running between Exchange 2013 and 2007 when Link is involved? Because what's happening is the SOAP request gets denied on the 2007 side, so every Link user gets an error box every time they launch. So I'm just wondering, is there any, it has to do with the auto-discover.
So I think the question, the, So the question I believe was, in the 2013-2007 coexistence case, you've seen where the auto discover ends up for the 2007 mailbox is returning an error, correct?
Right. If the user's on 2013, it's not an issue, but if they're on 2007
we are aware of that issue. It got reported, and we are actually working on fixing it. I'm looking at one of my program managers, Victor, and I believe we're aware of this. We're already fixing that. So
yeah. The dev's working on it as we speak.
Yeah.
That's why he's not here.
On its way.
How soon?
The next CU will have it. We can't promise. Assuming he fixes it, it'll be in the next.
But it's something we're actively working on now. We are aware of the problem, and we know
we're aware of it. If we can get it into the next CU, we will. Otherwise, in the next available as soon as we get it coded up. Basically, we know there's lots of people complaining about it right now. So.
Thank you.
Hey there. So when talking RPC over HTTP, then the RPC actually also adds an additional layer of encryption normally if configured. In the MAPI over HTTP world, is that encryption then gone? So there's no more other encryption beside HTTPS?
So that is correct. I think with both, whether you use RPC or HTTP where you're using anonymous authentication or whether you're using MAPI or HTTP, the encryption you're relying on is HTTPS. You know, we thought about that quite a bit because I know that there's RPC layer encryption, but we felt comfortable not worrying about that second layer of encryption because today a lot of these web applications which are widely used, they rely on the HTTPS encryption, and I think that the setup, our users, customers have been fairly comfortable with it.
And
so, go ahead.
If you configure Kerberos with MAPI over RPC over HTTP, encryption is disabled. RPC encryption is disabled. When you are Outlook Anywhere configured, okay, you enable Kerberos by setting Negotiate. It brings up the anonymous authentication, and RPC encryption is grayed out. It's not cannot be enabled, and RPC is not encrypted.
But if I go for NTLM?
If you go for NTLM, then you have encryption, yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that is gone then?
With MAPI or HTTP, that's gone. With MAPI or HTTP, there's an HTTP layer, and you get HTTPS. Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Howdy. I'm always interested in more diagnostics for troubleshooting connectivity issues. One of the things I love about like Network Monitor is that RPC over TCP, you can really have everything segregated out as far as like the RPC connection, EWS connection, MAPI's, you know, 7575 over 7576 and stuff. And without looking anywhere, it all gets condensed into 443. Now, you had some stuff up there about like some possible diagnostics, but you're a little coy about it, like this might not be out for you guys yet.
So
can you give any more specifics on what we'll get for diagnostics for troubleshooting MAPI over the new protocol?
I think, thanks for the feedback. That feedback has been echoed by others as well. Number one is we're looking at what tools we can provide which leverage the headers flowing back and forth. There is also making sure the test exchange connectivity supports MAPI or HTTP because that's a place often people go. And then the good news is, even as these are getting ready, you know, internally often we just use a tool, standard tool like Fiddler. One of the goals of this was to be able to use a standard tool which people use to debug web applications and look at what the traffic looks like.
Okay.
And so one of the things we're looking at is maybe publishing a blog article or something saying, if you're using Fiddler, what would you look for? What do you debug? What do each of these fields mean, for example? So really, in the interest of time, I didn't explain every field, but those are the three things. Was there something else you were looking for?
Well, no. I mean, the Fiddler part is extraordinarily helpful because we get that every once in a while, but there's not a lot of guidance on Fiddler, and that's a non-Microsoft product, so there's no guidance on how to use it in consideration of troubleshooting Microsoft products. So a KB article or something like that, like, here's how you use Fiddler in consideration of a...
Yes, that's
that would be absolutely perfect. And folding that into the test Outlook connectivity would also be extraordinarily helpful. So
sure.
if that's in the works or if there's something coming
up. Test Outlook connectivity today supports it.
Does it?
Yes.
Okay.
In fact, one of the things we recommend is once you turn on MAPI HTTP, run Test Outlook connectivity. So when the deck is posted, you will see that there's a example of how to run it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's already supported.
But beyond that, what we do want to do is publish a blog article or some guidance on, hey, KB Rigolon, here's how, if you needed to use Fiddler to debug.
And I've used Fiddler to debug, but if you're not familiar with it or if you've never done any like HTTPS stuff, it can be like reading Greek. And so guidance for people who aren't familiar with that layer would be great.
Yeah, sure.
Thank you.
Hi. Two questions about Outlook Anywhere with CU3. The first one, since you have a lot of graphs and information about the connectivity, time needed by clients to reconnect, etc., did you see some difference between the bandwidth used by 2010 SP3 and the bandwidth used by Outlook Anywhere client used by 2013 CU3? Did you see some differences?
That's a great question. I believe in the tests we did, we primarily compared the latest CU from the latest build from Exchange with MAPI HTTP. I don't believe we have done the analysis of CU3 versus Exchange 2010. We haven't done that. Is there a specific reason?
Yeah, because with MAPI RPC, this customer, 3,000 users using pure MAPI with 2010, had, for example, 2 megabit persistence connection all the day. Now in 2013, CU3,
Outlook Anywhere, of course,
they grew up by 1 megabit. So it's, instead of 2 megabits per second total connection, is 3. So I'm figuring out if we have some data about
the bytes over the wire you're seeing.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. That's not something we have looked into, and something maybe if you can please email me.
Sure.
And then we can figure out, I think, who, because I know that there's a bandwidth calculator which someone is working on. Guy wants to say something. Go ahead, Guy.
Yeah.
There's a bandwidth calculator, and I want to point you
from Nate Johnson.
Sorry?
There was a session from Nate Johnson regarding the Outlook bandwidth calculator.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
today? No, it's not yet done yet. So.
It's not public anyway, so it was coming.
But I'm not sure that he will include MAPI over HTTP yet, but it will include Outlook Anywhere.
Okay.
Yeah.
And if I can, I have a second and a short question. Also, this customer is telling is a load balancer. Long story is slowing down connection, especially to archive that, you know, of course, is online, no cache. Okay, I saw a lot of interesting data in your charts about the performance. Is there any way to granularly understand if a client has a good customer experience or no? I know it's a bad question. I mean, there is Outlook Advanced Login, but it's not easy to.
Are you asking with MAPI HTTP or Outlook Anywhere?
Outlook Anywhere.
Sorry. Outlook Anywhere. So I believe the question is there a granular way to analyze what is the user experience from the Outlook side?
To have an objective per user data about customer experience.
We don't have anything public. Like the data that we showed there was mostly internal thing. Like it's an internal tool to collect that data. So there is nothing that's actually exposed to the customers. Basically, that you can use our tools that you can have the user run so that you can collect this information.
Okay.
That's good feedback actually.
That's good feedback. We'll go back and see what is it.
Could I write to you as mentioned to continue this discussion?
We can sorry.
Yes.
Okay. Got it. So one more gentleman. I think one more question.
Just really quickly on his, the data is there in the protocol logs. So if they wanted to write scripts, they could theoretically pull it up on a per user basis.
Yeah.
So
just to finish the thought, the protocol log has size information, so you could use that. Yeah, and latency.
Hi. I'm not really sure if Pat's the right question, because it was based on an Outlook to Exchange presentation and MAPI over HTTP. I'm just curious, because in one of your slides, you showed multi-connected devices, tablets, phones, Wi-Fi routers, GPRS towers, everything, so on an airplane through a satellite connection, blah, 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 blah. But the whole of this session was directed at Outlook to Exchange. Does any part of this play in to ActiveSync? Is there any change coming needed? Is there any with the ActiveSync part of it? Because obviously the loads and loads of devices connect through a tablet or a phone that are not necessarily an Outlook connection.
So that's a great question. So I think the reason we show the picture or the graphic talk to it is because there was a talk before this at 8:30 a.m. You have a link to it in the deck, you should look at it. The team has done a lot of awesome changes to make touch work better and for it to work on all these devices. So in that picture, assume people are using still Outlook. Now, ActiveSync itself, in a way, because they started developing the protocol primarily with mobile phones in mind, they actually have done a great job of making themselves very efficient. In fact, when we designed MapPHTP, we looked very, very closely at what ActiveSync does and try to copy the same pattern. So it makes more sense for those phones and for those devices to continue to use ActiveSync. But what we're trying to say is, since Outlook is available in many, many more form factors and access from many more environments, we want to make sure that Outlook Exchange interactions are a good citizen as well and can ensure a good user experience. Okay? Right? So with that, we're going to wrap up. Please do. It was a Q&A session, so please...